Hello and welcome to our very special episode here for the Milano Design Week as part of our House of Automotive exhibition slash event series that Concept House is doing during the said Milano Design Weeks. And we thought we're going to share a little bit more insights of stuff that we have discussed, stuff that's going to be part of our two conference in that sense. And we have two of the world's global and foremost most important leaders and two key topics that we're talking in this conference about here. On to my left directly here is Amy Fascella. Amy, a very warm welcome. And you are representing the CMF, or what you have called it now in the past, materiality side of this nice little chat. And digitally with us, even though he's now in the same town as well, is Christian Eckert, one of the foremost leaders when it comes to experience design within the mobility design space, both on the digital and physical space. And we thought we're going to bring you guys together a little bit because obviously materiality, CMF, as well as this experience topic has become biggest thing over the past 10 years and probably has changed automotive design from its core like nothing really else has in the past 50 years in that context. The development that we have seen on both levels here have been absolutely astonishing. We had completely new people coming into this industry through a newfound importance of CMF materiality and the digital experience in particular, but the experience overall. So there is also an idea that this could mix into the future. So before we get in all of these kind of things, and Amy, I'll start with you because Milano is very traditionally a materiality, a color exhibition. It combines so many different things, such as furniture, like product design, industrial design, and the car design world gets into it more and more and more, especially over the past, I would say, 3 to 5 years. So what are you looking forward to, A, with the Milano Design Week, but also what are trends that you're seeing at the moment that you expected to be represented there quite a bit?
Gosh, Milan every year just seems to get bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, when you have to literally be strategic and plan your visits if you want to try to see as much content, whatever you can take in. For me, what's going to be really interesting is seeing how dynamic or big or bold a lot of these experiential exhibits can be, with an underscore of an intelligence and like making sure that the brand that that exhibit is representing, I guess, that comes through. Because sometimes you can have a really big, bold exhibit, but the red thread isn't there. Mm. So I think for me, like, I think Samuel Ross has an exhibit on hospitality. Last year, he did a collaboration with Kohler, the orange commode, which was quite interesting. There'll be a lot of content at kind of the little shows that happen around the center. So like Capsule Plaza, there's an Ez Devlin exhibit. I think it's like a light library of light, something like this. That will probably be immersive in all the senses, considering, you know, the type of artist that she is. Gosh, yeah. Like also the Isola Design Festival. I think the theme of that little kind of fest within the fair is called Design is Human. And they specifically talk about the fusion of digital and artisanal like craft techniques. So those things for me will be really exciting.
Yeah. Christian, on the let's call it focus point digital experience, or like the experience in general, what are you expecting from Milano?
Well, I think Milano, for me at least, is kind of a mirror for cultural shifts also. So it completely evolves from being, I think, actually, I don't know when it started, but it was like maybe it was just basically furniture design, right? And now it's really, as you said, Amy, like all senses, really. And I think that's the biggest trend we'll see. I think an interface, we're still designing interaction for people, not just machines necessarily. This might change, but for now, we still design interface design for humans. And so it's a very inspiring event. If you look at the intersection of new materials or digital and haptic and physical, new metaphors for interaction design, how maybe new materials can translate into digital and vice versa. I think it's a huge inspiration for storytelling, emotional brand storytelling. I think last year we saw some amazing installations where basically the space becomes your interface. You can interact with it. and the space around you adapts based on who is there, what you do, how you interact with it, what time of day it is. So very context aware and user aware and user centric. So that's from my perspective, something that's very interesting. Can't wait to get started.
I want to dive a little bit into that kind of mix of those kind of things. Do you see that the materiality and perspective with a digital experience is now becoming much more connected through these events like Milano in particular? Because obviously in the car world, we do see experiments quite regularly, especially with, you know, screens combined with materials. But do you see different things within a non-car environment, much more product-oriented or maybe also furniture-based, where this collaboration between a material and an experience, and this could be a digital but also a physical experience, is kind of leading the way at the moment? Or is this shifting constantly back and forth between industries, between ideas, and sometimes also between companies?
Yes to all of that. I would say, like Milan, you know, like Christian said, it started off like 50, 60 years ago, it was just furniture. And then, like, I think in the 70s, they started shifting kind of what they were showing to that industry at the time to start showing more content around lighting and the technology integration within kitchens and like how people live and work and, you know, interact with, you know, their home spaces. So, yeah, I think that as this is going to be like a really big global design fair beyond just furniture, you're definitely going to see that kind of multi-discipline skill set coming together. You see it outside of Milan too, because like there's this big thing that's been happening over the last few months in the material world around process videos.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way they just did an exhibition for their fall winter 2025 collection where, you know, they were showing the new clothes in an art museum, I think in the Annie Albers and Joseph Albers Foundational Museum. So you already see like the combination of art, fashion, but then they'd have these digital process films showing how the craft mm-hmm. of the product that they were showing was created. And then this has been exploding online, like with, you know, other fashion brands following, showing all their process. Mm-hmm. Like, and this ranges from the digital experience of being very analog and kind of almost shot on an iPhone of like, okay, here's the factory, here's the machine that's created this thing, this handle for a bag or whatever, to recreating the process digitally. Mm-hmm. So you can really control the aesthetic, what parts of the process, material process you want to show, clearly controlling the aesthetics of that to connect with the storytelling of that particular brand, that particular product. So yes, to everything you just asked, I think. Yeah.
Totally. You touched on so many things. Maybe that's one of the biggest topics to me, actually, because it relates to how we develop those experiences also, how we set up what the processes are, what the organizations are. I think they need to change completely. For me personally, I think two or three things are super exciting right now. One, of course, is how interfaces, how we interact with machines, changes based on AI and what AI enables to do. I think a big next step will be generative interfaces that change much more dynamically based on context. But now we had very often very static interfaces. You click here, something happens, and you have to click there. I think we see much more dynamic, adaptive, contextual interfaces. I think we also see a big trend where, enabled by AI, by the way, or machine learning, I think we see also a huge trend, which I think is super interesting, especially looking at Milano, in this era of software-defined vehicles, which I rather call experience-defined vehicles, because software is just an enabler, but then today you have an experience coming out of that. So if I think about that shift where we have to design for so many modalities, right? We're still driving a car, but maybe we're driving, we have semi-autonomous driving. So the car can be a mode of transportation, but it can also be a living room. It can be an office. It can be whatever you want it to be. And so for that to create great experiences in that space, you need interdisciplinary innovation. And so I think to break down those silos, you know, what we maybe used to have in the past, of maybe there's exterior design, interior design, color, material, and UI, UX. Don't even like that term. But I think that's going to changed and has to change. And I love that idea where the digital experience expands into fabrics, for example, or lights or sound or ideally a combination of all based on what you need. But for me, it's always the experience comes first and technology is the enabler. That defines really what you want to create. And then you look at, okay, what technology, what fabrics, what modalities do you need to enable that?
Amy, how, to jump a little bit on this kind of notion of experience as well, how has the thought and this kind of development of this new, call it sub-department of experience design, UX design, changed how you're looking into your core function of CMF, materiality? Are you looking into things differently? Are you looking into technology in a completely different way? Because Christian, I think, is very right. How we are seeing this experience and defining them can be seen very differently from, let's say, something very haptic from to something digitally. How do you see this, or how has it changed for you? And how do you think it's going to change also maybe the future of the role of materiality looking into that?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually quite exciting. I would imagine in both disciplines we're talking about here today, roles that need to be there don't exist. You know, leaders of those disciplines are crafting new jobs that blur the lines, like depending on the organization, depending on the brand. In my previous experience, we were having just this debate, you know, with new softwares like Substance, like how do we get people with CMF experience trained up to use these kind of softwares so they can create digitally as opposed to starting to creating physically, which is the traditional route when you start to ideate creatively. And then, you know, let's say you have a group of people with this skill set that are working digitally first, you know, developing materials or whatnot. Does that kind of skill set get incubated in the CMF teams? Or in the digital teams or the experience teams? And then, you know, where does brand come, creative come into all that? So I think, yeah, like there's going to be a new definition of these cross-functional multidisciplinary teams, where they sit and how they work across all of the expertise in the studios, you know, depends on the output. But most definitely, like, it is a new era of defining how the physical and the digital merge. I'm sorry to say this again, but both physically and digitally and from a process point of view, and like where all that comes into the design iterative process. Because, you know, some of the stuff is, you know, you're going to want to use it more pragmatically, but then some of this, these new tools you're going to want to use in a way where you can create content digitally that you can't yet create physically.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I think with all these surges of new technologies and new tools, any brand would be remiss to not still consider the physicality of design, you know, because there's a lot of ways that humans interact that, you know, need to be taken into account for, or the way you want the person to feel physically and digitally in the space, and how all that works in harmony together. So I guess what I'm trying to say is the physical aspect doesn't go away. It's just you need to figure out how these tools work in conjunction with all that, and what part of the process are you starting digitally, starting physically, or starting with both at the same time, and where all those overlaps lie with those disciplines. Sorry, that was very long-winded.
Christian, can you jump onto this from the other side maybe a little bit as well, and just to kind of say, you know, how do you digitally see something become physically attractive maybe to people? Okay, like, you know, how the physicality can help people to use the digital point of view as well? Because I think there is a certain discrepancy going on still nowadays, is that one is digital, the other one is physical. But how can we combine those? What's your experience on that?
Yeah, it's a great topic. And I feel like, especially with the world of digital designers, so to speak, where I've been the last 20 years, especially the automotive or some of the more traditional OEMs always struggled a little bit to really find a way where to put those guys. Like, you know, first I started 20 years ago, BMW, it was the ergonomics team. Then at some point we moved into the design team. In other companies, it's part of the engineering team, actually. And all of those might be actually good. That's why I think first of all, I think the more interdisciplinary and the less silos, the better. I know I said that already, but I think it's really, really crucial. Because for me, defining an experience, you cannot just look at digital or physical. It has to be both. And we're designing for humans, so you need all senses. And we had maybe a bit of a shift of too much Black Mirror interiors, where you just slap a huge, you know, piece of screen into an interior, mainly because it was cheaper actually at the beginning, at least hardware side, right? But if you consider the digital development costs of UI, UX design, software development is actually not cheaper necessarily. But I think maybe a lot of companies went a little too far in that direction and just made it maybe a little too easy to come up with more multimodal interfaces, more human-centric interfaces, in my opinion. And so now we see a bit of a pushback and people are requesting buttons and other haptic interfaces back into the car. I know some companies do have dedicated what they call tangible interface design teams. So they are, you know, taking care of the, I don't know, buttons on a steering wheel, for example. I think one of the reasons why so many people want those tactical interfaces again is also because a lot of the digital design is not good enough, you know. So I think you can do a lot by improving the digital experience as well. But I think for every interaction, there's a really good method of interaction. I'm personally a fan of multimodality, so you have some freedom to choose what to use and when and in what situation. For example, in my previous car, it had gesture control, and it took a second to get used to it. I loved it a lot because it's so natural, and I used it for example, just increasing the volume, and it works super seamlessly. I don't have to look at it, which is a huge factor. So even though I almost forgot what your question was, Martin, at this point.
I think you really got that. It's a, you know, this kind of combination of the physical and the digital side. And of course, how we can bring this into a day-to-day operation as well. Because for me, you know, you mentioned something, it also has to have an ease. We do have to have a certain kind of aesthetic. Amy, you mentioned the topic of brand. So it needs to represent, you know. And I think we're getting into a conversation now where I want to pick up on brand a little bit quickly as well, because it's a representation of that as well. You know, so who defines, of course, the brand is a big topic that we're having throughout, I think, the automotive industry at the moment. We're seeing roles like in Toyota, where the design chief owns the brand as well. We're seeing other areas where the brand and the designer completely split. And there's other ways of kind of making it work somehow in between. But on an operational design level, where it now becomes interesting to me, is how does the representation of the brand, so for example, with materials, with colors, very naturally move from the physical side into the digital side, and how is that being collaborated on? Yeah. So to give you an idea, if you make a very conscious decision of using leather as a material, yeah, even though that's not really what a lot of people are doing, but let's take it as an example. How do you want to bring that onto the digital experience? Is there a way that CMF now gets more involved in materiality also in terms of what the interface then will actually look like? How do they collaborate? But also vice versa is to say, what is a luxurious or also a very pragmatic solution for us digitally that might have an impact of what materials we are using, because it's supposed to be an overall experience for the vehicle in that context as well. How do you see that developing? What do you think in the future could happen through that? Is that in, let's say, agile teams or much more a matrix organization? Do you think topics in that content, there will be CMF designers within an experience team, for example, as well? Or what do you see as realistic or is in your imagination at the moment where this could become reality for a much closer collaboration?
Yeah, I would say all the above. Definitely more matrixing, more overlapping, so people can work in a more multidisciplinary way, because that's where you get the best results, you know, by everyone contributing rather than it being more siloed. I would say that, and when I say matrixing it in all areas, yeah, like it's not just like CMF into digital, but definitely CMF into brand, those experts there, maybe even in like if you have a seating design team as part of interior architecture, I don't know. But most definitely, like I can see CMF expertise working quite well within the digital teams, the digital experience teams, or even the experience teams, because, you know, color is about communication. And I'm sure that a lot of the experts, you know, I'm sure Christian, you can speak more to this in terms of like how you use color for wayfinding or like hierarchy of information. But I think, you know, color psychology, that can all play together. And if you've got these disciplines mixing together, exchanging ideas, that's the future, you know, more of that for sure.
Totally. And I think one exciting space I'm looking at right now is also that space of ambient computing and invisible interfaces. So in my opinion, the best interface knows when to appear and disappear. So I think in a world where powered by technology, you can have this multimodal interaction. You also need those interconnected teams to design for that. Also, since we speak about brand, I feel the brand really is not just the badge on the car anymore. The whole product really is a dynamic expression of that brand, but also of you know, the user journey, the context where you're going. So I think we have to design across all these senses, across all these use cases and contexts, and therefore you need this collaboration between those teams. I think from a digital design perspective, it's very interesting because you have almost three big areas where you have to be very connected. And actually, I think the interface design team also has to be somehow the interface between many departments, because there's this one world where we would create those experiences, define them, create them, test a lot. So I think that the space of prototyping is extremely important. And that's a haptical space. So you have to build these experiences to test them, to also to create them, to experiment in it. So that's where you need a lot of collaboration from going from digital to building tangible experiences, basically. But I think the other very important one is you also want to make sure that you deliver against that great vision in the final product. And for that, you need a really good integration into the software development and engineering teams. So in my world, if I look at it a little bit more from the digital perspective, it's really important to be in these both worlds where first we, again, create that experience and define it together in those interdisciplinary collaborations. But then you also need a really strong connection to the engineering teams, because that's where I see a lot of, you know, great show cars out there with amazing interactive concepts and digital experiences, but it's really, really hard to translate it into a really good digital product. And therefore, already like 10 years ago, and in my previous life at some electric car startup in California, when I joined those guys, we were in this super fast-paced environment, of course, but the setup of the design team was rather traditional with an exterior design, interior, color material, and UI, UX. And that just did not work for that fast-paced era of software-defined vehicles or experience-defined vehicles. So actually, not instead, but on top of us developing the actual products, I invest a lot of energy and time actually in redesigning the organization and changing it to a digital product organization where you have UX designers, UI designers, software engineers, product owners, product managers. Because otherwise, you are a really good design team, but not necessarily connected enough in that space that actually turns it into reality. And I'm not saying that's the only way that works or it's the best one. All companies are different, and especially changing the organization in a huge OEM is, of course, extremely challenging. But I think slowly but surely, we have to change the organization for that, because it's just sometimes still too many silos and just too slow as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think like the blurring of like the skill sets, like you talked about engineers and the digital work that you're doing. Like, I bet there's like people that are developers that are also designers and designers that can do a bit of development. So it's like, how do you, you know, where do all these people sit? So I guess it's all coming, but it's like, how do you ensure that you set it up for success so everyone can work in this way and contribute? I think that is kind of the flow or the challenge moving forward. You even mentioned it, Martin, where some organizations have brand creative firmly within, you know, the creative design space, and some have it kind of spread out. I'm sure all creatives have their own opinion on that. But I think that will be like some of the challenges for the future as all these disciplines start to blur a bit and all these experiences for the end user, the client, need to be seamless.
I want to jump into the topic of, you know, where things blur and mix together versus the idea of still having the specialists, of course. Do you think from a developmental point of view, yeah, and of course, Christian, where the digital side is much quicker in that sense, but also I remember having a conversation very recently where an executive told me the biggest problem is that the top level management expects to see something digitally that it's then uploaded into the over-the-air system within 24 hours and it's accessible in your car within 72 hours. So there's a kind of misunderstanding of what can be done digitally. And I think, Amy, on the other side, what we see in CMF all the time is a way too late supplier nomination for topics as well. So how do you see a process that you have described now change a little bit? Do you think that there's a longer conceptual stage also with new ideas such as AI coming in to kind of say, okay, we're testing more things out, but then have our specialists to bring that to life and have a very clear cut on this one? Or do you think it's not as simple as that to show it? Because it seems that it's so far away and there's so many things that would need to change just outside of the design as well to kind of make sure that we can move that quickly as well. I don't necessarily think it's just a design challenge or a design problem.
So, well, first of all, just one more thing to what you mentioned earlier. I think totally creatives are not just the designers, right? Like everybody involved in this development process has a creative side that should be considered in that. I think about engineering, ergonomics, all of those disciplines should be involved and contribute and not just execute 100%. I think for us, I would say from a specialization point of view, I think a T-shaped expertise, so to speak, for us makes a lot of sense in our world where you have to have a broad understanding of your whole world and beyond. You cannot just be a visual designer and that's all you do, or a motion designer and that's all you do. You have to really understand a lot about ergonomics, what's happening in AI, other tools, color material, of course. But then because it is getting so complex, you need to be really good or a specialist in one thing. So that, at least for now, in our world, is the best setup from a, you know, individual expertise level, like have that T-shape characteristic, so to speak. And I think what also in the interim actually really helps, because I totally understand how complicated it is to change a huge organization. But what I've seen in the past real work is if you set up project teams together in a room, it's really as simple as that. If you put people together that work on the next generation of whatever, and you have, you know, color material, you have software engineering, you have digital design, you have ergonomics, prototyping, which I think is super important. And those people in a room can do really magic. And also it's not so much then about them versus us. It's really a team setup. And that's something where, you know, you get excited if someone from a, you know, other department comes up with an idea that helps the over experience to be better, or the product to be better. So I feel like that's a really great step, the interim. And also, I think it's a lot of fun because if you only at your same desk in the same office your whole life, which has changed a lot these days, of course, anyways, but I think that new environment can also be very inspirational. So I think, speaking of designing experiences, I think also the way, like our space where we as the creators design experiences matters a lot. So I think bringing those people together in a room is already one step that can do really nice things.
I mean, there's a reason why concept projects or white space projects typically are very successful because of the timeline you have to set up in the way that Christian has just described, where everyone's mucking in, all the disciplines are together, you know, because they have to be. I think that deep specialisms, because you were asking about, you know, is this about, you know, is it a question of depth and breadth? And I agree with Christian that, you know, you've got to be able, at least I've seen growing up in this industry, in like the digital space and the CMS space, these have been traditionally the areas where there's a lot of interfaces to manage, right? From a business perspective, engineering, you know, consumers. I'm not saying that the other disciplines don't get involved with lots of different teams and departments outside of the core organizational design, but I just see this, these two disciplines have had to grow up with so many interfaces, managing all those expectations and collaborating. So yeah, I think I hate to stray away from this concept of like deep specialism, like that deep depth of knowledge, because I think that there's a passion there that you could lose. But like, it does seem business is going that way where designers have to be able to do lots of different things. Designers become the team, right? You don't necessarily have the budget or the time to have all the different specialisms come together. So yeah, I think it is that balance of depth and breadth. But for me, in a studio, to get the rich output that you want or the innovation that you want, you can't ignore people that want to have deep specialism in the same way that you need to foster and support people that want to have different experiences, because that could foster that deep specialism or help them find that deep specialism. Or if they have more general breadth, then they can really move around the organization in a nimble way. I think that I've gone off on a tangent now. But yeah, I think it just depends on the organization. It depends on the culture there. It depends on like how they show creative work. Like, I've always worked in studios that have a show me, don't tell me way of working, or at least like that's how I've kind of worked. And I think with non-creatives, that can absolutely help. Like, you know, we talked earlier about like the process videos that are coming out from different brands to kind of explain maybe why something costs the way it does, the way it costs, or, you know, where things come from. And I think in the same way that the digital world, like, it's so new, like, people need to understand that to integrate the technology or to make those changes, it takes this long, or, you know, there's a level of intelligence that hasn't yet existed to do what people are asking you to make it do. So yeah, I think I forgot your question, but all things. Yeah.
Oh, but we can jump onto this a little bit, because it's just something that came to my mind that both areas that we're discussing here have in common, is that the conceptual ideas often start internally, but then you are including much more the supplier landscape as well to bring to life what you have in mind. You know, I think on the CMS side, this has been, you know, decades long that this is this case. I think we know in the especially in the car world, the actual industrialization, call it that way, on the digital side happens in a completely different context as the conceptual side. But how do you kind of fit those topics now together to keep the idea of a brand identity from, let's say, digital materials or materials that are physically then developing, so that we can translate that into a strategy and say like, hey, look, this is where the brand actually develops into the future? Because it seems to me that due to the kind of flexibility and maybe also the changes that the customers want in the end, so like, over the air updates are now an expectation. It's not just a nice to have. It's like, hey, I want to have the latest car. We see in the luxury space at the moment, you buy a car secondhand, but you go back to the car, to the manufacturer, and say, I want to have a new material, or I want to have it in the way that I've had it, but I don't want to rebuild the car in that context as well. How does this combine together into like a new form of brand identity, new strategies that could shape also a little bit how the brands then are being recognized in the future? Because you can be much more flexible. But at the same time, you need to have the technical understanding to say, well, what do we have as possibilities here? Rather than just, you know, say like, okay, it's a one and done thing. And now we're moving on to the next one. Because I think, especially for you, Christian, that's never the case. I don't know any company at the moment that is not running on a release-based process and, you know, develops a new operating system for every car. This is just completely unrealistic.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really exciting, but also a challenge a bit, that what you mentioned. Now we do have finally over-the-air updates. And when I started, that's like, you know, 20 plus years ago, that wasn't possible. So you had to design now what would be on the market in 5 years, and then it would still be alive for another 10 to 12 years. And especially in the digital world, things change so quickly that like you could never compete or keep up with consumer electronics, for example, which for me is from a design perspective was exactly the perfect challenge. How do you design for that challenge that you have to anticipate where the world will be in 5 years and you can't change it? Now you can. And that's why for us in software development and experience design, the project is never done because you keep improving and iterating, adding features, removing features constantly, right? And keep making this product better. I think an important part for this is also data, really understand who is using it, what are you using, what you need and when, and leveraging data in the best way. I think that's still a huge space where we can become better. I think another interesting one is that we design for most of the cars, maybe all of the cars actually. You design both for digital natives, but also, I don't know, analog loyalists, so to speak, right? Yes. That you have all age groups from 16 to 86 or 106. So that's why also I think it's so important to think holistically and not just think about what kind of buttons I can place on a screen, but how can you bring all these different age groups together in this very unique space, actually. I don't know where there are many other products where you have all so many different users and customers. And also across regions, I think that cultural difference we see right now a lot also where China is delivering, designing, developing amazing vehicles and, you know, with the latest and greatest in technology, and people there love it. But that does not necessarily mean that everybody in Europe, for example, loves the same product experience. So I think coming back to always the brand and the user, I think first is what's the brand experience that you want to deliver against? Who is the user? And then bring it back to this human-centric definition of what that product experience should be. And from there, you kind of bring together the disciplines and expertise that you need to deliver against it. And actually, I was wondering, and that I think is a great, I'm really, really fascinated about it because in digital and software, obviously, now it's much easier to develop and deploy updates. But in CMF now, it's much harder. So I'm really curious, actually, it's almost a question, like how can you in the future also update the, you know, the tactile experience in a car, if at all, because I think that's also an interesting space to look at where I think we've seen some modular things where you can clip some things, but not really, and maybe you can't reveal it yet, but I think that's an interesting space as well. Like how can you keep evolving or updating the whole cabin experience and not just the digital side?
Yeah, like what's the software over the air for physical materials?
Yeah,
I guess that depends on, you know, again, brand, the interface with clients, because, you know, maybe in a luxury space that they're already set up to provide those type of services that are more bespoke. But, you know, when there is a lot of focus on shifting all powertrains to EV, you know, it's like, what are people going to retail spaces for now? They're not going to get like, you know, the traditional service on their vehicle because there's no, you know, it's a battery, right? Yeah. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there when you were talking about, you know, designing for modularity, Christian. Those could be services that are offered to clients at retail spaces. You know, if there's a OEM brave enough to start taking that challenge on. But I think eventually that will come because to be more sustainable, you know, products have more longevity. And, you know, maybe people will keep these ICE vehicles and convert them eventually when they feel more comfortable or whatever's coming next, but they'll need support to do that. So I think there can be a lot of different ways to deliver those new offerings, but the infrastructure needs to help be set up for that. And I don't want to like put the accountability on somebody else, but yeah, I think that unless there's a cottage industry that's going to pop up for this. But yeah, I think there needs to be a whole new way of providing services and doing business for clients, especially if the move is to have more longevity in product, or maybe the digital experience starts to address some of that in terms of aesthetics to look more modern or to feel more modern. Because, you know, I'm conscious that it's not just about slapping a bit of carbon fiber in the background of, you know, the iconography. It, you know, it's also about the movement and the sound that creates that totality of experience for the brand and the brand expression, as well as the materiality of that. So
I think to that point, you know, what's super interesting is I think brand collaborations also and how maybe a mobility brand will change in the future, and maybe not for every car company, the car is necessarily the main product experience necessarily anymore in the future. Mobility obviously is so much broader. And while ideally you have a really strong vehicle experience, enabling the mobility or transportation through different means or connecting them, I think, is a huge space. That's very interesting if you think about the brand. So, you know, it used to be horsepower, and I think now experience is the new horsepower, really. And so I think that requires brands to think differently. And what I think also both on the analog and digital side, like thinking and opening up maybe a little bit to brand partnerships. When I think of, you know, in certain generations and markets having skins from some computer games that enter the you know, automotive space, or you have fashion label partnerships, which already are there here and there a little bit, but you can think it across digital and analog. So those like brand studios, I'm just thinking, could be really cool, where you can get a complete refresh, digital and analog, to a certain extent, you know, every other year. I mean, I always dreamed of, if possible, it wasn't, but it will be, if I could just get a bigger, better screen in my car every year for Christmas and a better processor, I would 100% do it. You know, if it would have that upgradability. Technically very complicated, but I'm sure at some point it will be possible. And I think if you keep, also to your point of sustainability, keeping that vehicle longer for longer in the space, I think that's and improving brand experience, I think that's a super interesting direction for sure.
Well, you see, I mean, every fashion brand now is obsessed with hospitality, right? You know, clearly there's a reason for it, right? And definitely, I think, Christian, your point about automotive brands are, it's beyond the car, right? Especially as you move into the future, what are those retail experiences? Where else can the brand extend to? You know, there's a lot of automotive brands that are already in apartments, into hotels, hospitality to some extent. So yeah, I think where that brand can reach, that starts to get really interesting. Not that the car isn't the star, but the car is one part of the portfolio.
Yeah. And just to come back to what you mentioned, Christian, in terms of the updatability and stuff like that. Yeah. I think it's really funny because if you look back into the 90s, we had a massive tuning culture. And obviously a tuning culture is a development of a brand, which, however, wasn't really pushed from the OEM side, but rather from the individuals. And what we're seeing at the moment is, you know, you saw this, Porsche has now, or is now offering CarPlay modules that you can replace your old stereo in like a, I think a 993 or something like that. You can remove the old stereo and put a new one in there as well. So there are certain kind of tests. We see a retro, you know, scene, of course, come, you know, has been around for quite some time. So for me, a lot of the questions, I think, is also about what does the OEM take on, as in call it after sales development? And I think something like brand extenders such as flats or some, you know, like hospitality topics, those kind of things are relatively easy because you can collaborate with people. The legal aspects are relatively low. But if you want to upgrade older cars, if you want to even bring new materials into older cars, there's questions about homologization. There's question of, you know, does this need to be done professionally by in the garage and all these kind of things. And I think there needs to be a certain kind of simplicity that comes in because, and I do agree, if we could look into the longevity and the sustainability of vehicles, we can even go as far as saying, can we not use the same chassis for 15 years, but change body panels, for example, as well. Yeah, so like do facelifting in a very literal way. But this means that companies also need to update their business models. And I think at the moment they see it works in a certain way. And then over the air update, yeah, you can charge for. But, you know, what is your benefit if, for example, you would bring in a new level of materials that are more sustainable, that keep the car for longer, but it costs you X amount of money? Yeah. So in the current structure, I think it's also, in my opinion, the role of design to then show new business models where possibilities like this are actually becoming profitable. Because it's one hand, you know, you know, you mentioned, Amy, show it to people, but sometimes you need to show the business model and how it works as well to then back up your idea on how it can be done. And I think that's a fundamental topic that you learn from the digital side, but also from the CMS side that, let's say, interior, exterior, in that normal context probably don't have. They're being told this is what we need to do. But if you want to make sure your car is longer into the market and maybe has a different way of producing and generating profit, especially on the digital side as well, it needs to be done differently. Yeah. And I think I really don't think we're that far away from this idea of replacing, you know, a CPU or a GPU in a car. If you look already in terms of what happens from, again, the tuners and individual people, how they put in new screens into old vehicles as testing grounds, it is possible. I think the question just is, do we want to do this as an OEM or will it be a third party? And I think if it would be a third party, then the OEMs would almost then come in and maybe your job in the future lies with the third party, because that's where more possibilities and more options are actually able to bring into the car. And it's just, you buy the basic system and then you mod it and upgrade it the way you want it to, almost like an old computer in that sense.
I think it's really interesting because it's more like designing for ecosystems these days and systems of systems, right? So I think you have a digital life that you want to be included in your mobility life as well. You have your data, you have your contacts, you have your destinations, you have your, I don't know, music library, you have your access to your smart home, all that you have in the phone. So I think it needs to be extended in mobility space. But I also think speaking of business models, yes, for sure, you want to sell as many cars as possible, ideally, and not have people keep them actually for that long. But also, just coming to Munich a week ago, and I didn't take a cab or an Uber from the airport to the city, but a car share service, right? It was super easy. Hop into the car at the airport and drop it off right here in the hotel. It was awesome. It had CarPlay, so I immediately had all my data in there. It was much cheaper, much more convenient. And I feel this world of car sharing and ride sharing, although, or purpose-built vehicles, although many OEMs or companies in general, you know, struggle a bit because it's really not so easy to make money and enough revenue. But I think that's an interesting space too, if you think about brand-specific experiences and updates and using this maybe very short moment that people have because they don't own a car anymore. Right now in a city like Munich, after coming from an LA, where we needed the car to go anywhere. And now I hardly use the car at all, actually. But like when we need one, we grab one of those car shares that are around everywhere. And that's a very precious moment also for those brands where you can build this relationship really. So I think that's also where individualization, personalization, but also brand experience plays a very important role and can be used almost as a new dealership because you are basically giving a free test ride with a specific brand or vehicle included in your ride.
I want to bring up one last topic before we end the conversation, and that's the topic of storytelling overall. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about experiences in general, and it's not just the experience of you get into the car and you know what it's all about, but it's from the first time you look into the car to, let's say, the last time you look at it. And that, if you want to say so, could be, sounds super stupid, but it could be your death, you know, the last time you see that object. How do you imagine, with development of materials, with the development of digital topics, this storytelling will constantly follow through and constantly develop, either for the brand or for a specific kind of a vehicle, it could be anything in that kind of context, so that the people stay connected to it, that they will remember it from that perspective as well? What do you see the easiest ways and, let's say, you know, low-hanging fruit, A, from maybe a materiality perspective, but also from a digital perspective, to keep the people in the feeling like, hey, I want to go back to that. I want to be part of that story, because that's, I think, something that both of you constantly have in your minds is like, how do we get people reminded of what we're doing and like the materials that we're using, that they do want to come back to that as well. That they have a certain kind of comfort to them as well. And comfort digital and comfort physical is, of course, very different. But in the end, it comes back to the same feeling. It's like, I want to use it again. So what's your kind of, you know, ideas towards that? And is it possible to kind of constantly maybe even do that? Or is it just something that digital can do at the moment? Because we do have these problems of updating materials as well. Maybe start with you, Amy.
I think the storytelling aspect is something that cannot be... It's really powerful. You look at brands that highlight their team members, whether they're creative or not, to give like a little bit of a peek behind like the people behind the product. We talked about this explosion of like the need for process videos on like how things are made, where things come from, exploring the craft. Because there's one thing that I think every brand in the automotive industry would probably agree on is like craft, whether you take craft and connect it with quality, or craft and you connect it with innovation or sustainability, whatever, the craft of how these things come together can't be denied. Because we talked earlier about like, this is a very unique product where it's like products within products. It's a totality of experience, which not a lot of other products have those same levels of challenges in terms of it's a space, it's a place, it's a, you know, it's all these things. And make sure that you follow all the legals, because it has to be absolutely safe. But yeah, I think that automotive brand is rich with layers of stories. I mean, even at the factory, like how things are coming together, how is that an expression of that particular brand's approach to technology or the team members? I think people want to align themselves, their values with brand values, and that isn't going away. And I think storytelling is the means for making those connections. You know, right now, a lot of storytelling comes out through social channels or other like platforms like this. So maybe it's those opportunities that need to be expressed more or explored more. But yeah, I think storytelling and those narratives are important to retain clients or to engage clients or to make them think differently about the brand. The brand is going in different directions or, you know, evolving as it evolves. Yeah. But I mean, everything is a storytelling experience, from how when you turn it on, does it say hello, right? Or does it say good morning or good afternoon, like in whatever language? So yeah, I think it's all storytelling and it all needs to have a red thread. But yeah, there's low hanging fruit in terms of like just looking at what you have and starting to communicate that. I think there is a underestimation of how important communication is, but the right communication, not with an overly corporate lens, because, you know, I hate to use the word authentic, but there needs to be a level of approachability and authenticity so you can connect.
Can I add to that? I would call it honesty.
Yeah, I think that's a better word.
Because I think, you know, if you, and to give an example, and Christian, I would love to hear like your thoughts on this afterwards, but if you look at the Dacia, for example, and Dacia has a very limited digital experience in it as well. I think if you look back into, I think it was the Lupo or the Polo back in the Volkswagen days, when they didn't have a screen, they were just like, put your phone here as well. So it was a super limited kind of collaboration on the digital side, but it was still very honest. So the experience was honest in that context as well, and much more saying that if you would have had a big screen in there as well. And I think, you know, that's also like probably for you, this kind of idea about honesty on a digital context is also highly important.
Yeah, I think for sure. I think storytelling is a great topic, because that's not just something to consider in the final product, but I think that's a really powerful tool at the beginning of the journey when you start developing a product or a brand, actually. And I think this is where creatives can really craft this compelling vision that also then unites all these other groups and gets them excited and motivated on where, what's the goal, what do we want to achieve, and how does it feel at the end of the day? Because storytelling is emotional design, and we're designing for humans, and every good design tells a story. And so you would not remember a specific feeling or feature in a car, but you remember the feeling you had when using it. And that feeling is also part of that storytelling. So you need to design an emotional way, because you don't design the feature, you actually design what should come out of that. What's the result? What problem is solving? What are you helping? And that's why for me, an in-car interface especially is kind of like stage design. You have all these different players, right? You have a screen, maybe you have a speaker, you have materials, you have, you know, powerful software. and you have to orchestrate that in a powerful way to tell a really good story. And I think even more so in these days or the future, where you have those experience-defined vehicles, you can tell different stories, different times for different people, because you can change and adapt constantly on or very dynamically on who is with you in that vehicle, where are you going, what's the surrounding. So you can constantly adapt a bit the story also that you're telling. But I agree also the point of honesty or authenticity. I think people sense whether something is more like artificial or not very quickly. And that's why I think also this tactic, coming back to the very beginning, actually, you know, tactical feedback is something where people have a lot of trust. And I think building that trust is very important, especially in a world where we have so much self-driving technology and you don't really always trust the system just yet fully, even though it's amazing. Like living in LA, you have all these Waymo cars driving around without a driver and like no accidents almost. And it's amazing. But you know, you still need to build that trust and it will take some time. And I think this is also where that storytelling of making someone feel, you know, safe or make something feel or ideal. It is intuitive, you know, and make it easy to use. And also the joy of use, so the ease of use and the joy of use, I think is very important. And storytelling, therefore, is both, for me, I think super exciting in the initial phase where you craft that story, but then also in basically the final product experience when you are in a vehicle, for example, and experience all of those different things together.
I think just to build on some of the things that you were just saying, I've experienced working at companies where they don't talk about stuff until it's done, right? And there's a lot of opportunities that are missed along that journey. So if you're talking about building trust with clients or fans of the brand or future clients, whatever, I think there is a opportunity in terms of storytelling to take everyone on the journey as you experience success and failures to the final product. Because sometimes, you know, there's an art to trying something. And even if you haven't figured it out fully yet, you're signaling, you know, different values, different opportunities. And there could be a way to like have those dialogues already at the beginning. Like you were saying, the customer feedback. Well, if you're signaling, hey, we're trying this out, and there's this overwhelming response of like, oh my gosh, when are you going to have it figured out? That can be more data, more impetus to like solve it along the way. And I think that there is a fear to do that sometimes. And I understand that because you don't want to overpromise, but I think that storytelling should be done along the way and you bring your people, your community, your tribes along that journey with you.
Totally. And even if it ends up being a project that's not coming into this generation of cars, but into the next, you know, it's a certain transparency, I think, as well. And I think in particular, as a designer, what you want to achieve is that your ideas become reality. What you sometimes cannot control is the timings behind them. And but if you want to share those ideas, or like if you don't share those ideas, then of course you end up being in a situation that they might just end up being in a, you know, in a pile of other things, and nobody's really thinking about them anymore. And I think that kind of that culture of show and tell and share is going to be absolutely essential. Also, coming back to what we discussed in the very early beginning, collaboration, you know, exchange of ideas, exchange of knowledge in that context as well. Because if we don't do that, then you come back to what you said, Christian. Yeah, we're working back in silos. And I think we now get to a point where there's very few limitations where you can work in silos. But in the context of, let's say, a physical experience and a digital experience, if that's with materials, that with you know, digital content, that needs to be aligned. And it almost, maybe that's the thought for the end of the episode, is like to say, maybe it will become one department in the future. Yeah? Christian, we've talked about this in the past, that maybe the next design boss is not the traditional physical exterior designer, but maybe somebody who's more experience-based, depending on how we focus on certain kind of topics. And I think that's the really interesting thing to see what's going to happen in the next 2-3 years. And coming back to Milano, they show how collaborations work, yeah, and that there's no fear behind it in that sense. And the car industry sometimes probably fears to kind of put themselves onto the wrong foot. But if you see that Louis Vuitton can collaborate with whoever they want to, even with individuals, and you have Virgil Abloh in the past, or even Kanye West now, and Pharrell. You know, it's about lifting both up and not one up and one down. And I think that's where really internally it needs to start, that it says it's not either or, but it's us both together. And externally is exactly the same.
Totally. Maybe just the last thought on that one is, like, what is actually a car company in the future, or a mobility company? If you think from China, right, you have now all consumer electronics, not all, but like many consumer electronics companies become car companies. And I think also, I was just thinking, funny enough, if I think about the car company of the future, like in LA, very often Uber was my car company because that was my means of transportation used the most. I didn't care. I did care a little bit, but not that much what badge was on that car that picked me up, at least not on the outside, definitely on the inside. So I think that's an interesting space. And I think my last thought really, actually it's not my last thought, but I think we have to come to that, is a brand differentiation. If, especially in the EV world, when the products themselves become very similar in terms of like quality and other specifications, I think the experience layer is the one where you can differentiate your brand from other providers. Doesn't matter what it is, a consumer tech company, a car company, a fashion label. But I think, coming back to this, I think that's why experience and the brand experience and the customer or user experience in general, and to me, it's all about experience. It's user experience, customer experience, brand experience, product experience. Although we use that word a lot, but at the end of the day, it's all an experience. And I think that's why that's, of course, I'm a little biased, but that's maybe the most important thing in that space in the future.
Yeah, but I think to touch on your, like, everything is an experience. CMF has different terms at different studios. I've heard CME recently used at Audi. Materiality is used at, you know, Jaguar Land Rover. I think GM might be picking that up, at least the studio in the UK. But yeah, I think it's, brand is the differentiator. And I think that the industry can help itself with consortiums. Mm. And I think that's a whole nother topic.
And that we will do, hopefully then, for the Munich show. Yeah. We will pick this up then the next time. But Amy, Christian, thank you very much. And we're all, I think, very excited for Milano. I think, you know, you're all going to be there for the conferences. You're going to be there for the House of Automotive. So we're all really looking forward to having you there and for you to experience Milano in that sense. And for now, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. And see you all in Milano. And then the latest for an episode, hopefully again for Munich.
Ciao.
A pleasure. Ciao.
Pleasure. Thanks for having us.